What do you think your main accomplishments were in the last 4 years?
So I feel like I've been very successful in the last 4 years. I came in with my priorities around lean management, so improving our internal processes, mm-hmm. around public safety and around jobs in the economy. And when it comes to lean management, which I hit the ground running before, as soon as I was elected, but before I actually took office, started down that process. We ordered 150 books of called Extreme Government Makeover by Ken Miller. Fabulous book, little read, that talks about how in government we have great people, but they are hindered by the processes that are in place and the way that we've always done things for, you know, the last 50, 100 years. And you look at county government, it's over 100 years old. So I came into this really wanting to focus on not only the external piece, but the internal of how we run county government. And we have put over 300 people through lean management training at all levels of county government, including every department head and elected official. We have had over 500 project teams that have been created, and these project teams have to have a beginning and an end and a defined goal and outcome.
Okay.
So in looking at how we change what we do internally, we save over $1 million a year just by changing how we do things at Spokane County. And it's not only cost savings, it's also the customer service that we provide. A quick example, if you wanted to go to the Parks Department to get a permit for your family reunion at a Spokane County park, it used to take you 2 trips in 2 weeks to our Parks Department to get your permit. It's now online and takes less than 24 hours.
Okay.
It's simply changing how we do things.
Was there a lot of other things in that lean management guide? And you don't have to cite them, but you say we have saved $1 million by doing that?
So what we, both in indirect and direct cost, we save over $1 million a year in how we, just changing how we do things.
Okay.
So direct costs could be the fact that we now get people back to work sooner when they are out on medical leave. So we have worked with our doctors, we've worked with our department heads to actually create light-duty jobs so they can come back to work earlier rather than being out on L&I for months and months and months, which really just create an increased cost for the county.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's an example of direct cost. Indirect cost is in staff savings when it comes to reducing the time it takes. When we take a process that used to be 42 steps, and we reduce that down to 10. And then you significantly cut your time, your staff time associated with the project. So we're tracking all of those staff hours and the staff time that we've been able to find cost savings. And so in both direct and indirect costs, we save over $1 million a year.
Okay. And this is a direct comment that Mr. Viviano mentioned. So there's some real problems with our local government. One of them is kind of, he felt, sort of a too much of a connection between the current county commissioners and the, quote, business interests, and the connection to GSI. Do you want to just kind of, and I won't,
so
ask,
I'm a
you,
little,
I won't ask you to react to everything he
no,
said.
No, I'm a little biased. I'm obviously a little biased here because I spent 5 years working for GSI, and I fundamentally believe in the organization. As an organization in this community that is supportive of major initiatives in this community, we wouldn't have a medical school right now if we didn't have GSI. I remember when I started at GSI in 2008, beginning of 2008, I was talking to one of our education leaders at the university level, and I was talking about how excited I was about the medical school coming to Spokane. And he said, Shelley,
we're talking about the new medical school
okay. that we had a couple
yeah.
of years ago.
Yeah.
And he said, Shelley, he goes, I know that GSI thinks we're going to get this, you know, in the next couple of years. He said, this is 15 to 20 years down the road. And what happened? We got a new medical school a couple of years later because the organization comes around the major initiatives in this community that really drive how we grow our region.
And I just need clarification because you said a couple of years ago, but are we talking about the WSU Medical School?
It was combined UW-WSU Medical
yeah,
School.
Okay.
The building, the $75 million building that in the worst economic downturn of this state in recent years, this community was still able to get a new medical school.
Okay.
So, which is now two medical schools, which is, again, to our benefit, right? And so when you look at the initiatives that GSI drives, they're not just business initiatives. I mean, yes, they're a business development organization, mm-hmm. but they are also community initiatives, creating opportunities for our local economy to grow. And if you can grow your local economy, you grow your tax base, and you can then provide additional services to the community without having to go out and raise taxes. I mean, it's that great balance that, you know, we want to create jobs and opportunities in this community. And I fundamentally believe that GSI does that. So he comes at it from a different perspective. I don't believe that they have been partisan. I always felt when I worked there, literally for the 5 years I worked there, I always felt like both parties were upset with GSI. And I said, that's a great sweet spot to be in. Because then you know that they're an organization looking for,
exactly.
I mean, there are taxes that GSI advocates for, transportation. But then there are taxes that they don't advocate for, that they believe really in, B&O taxes that really infringe on, on their member, their companies. So okay. I believe that they do strike that balance.
Okay. And you talked a little bit about jobs. So what about specifics of the job creation issue, which seems to be always the hot button issue the last several years? You want to maybe talk about your general philosophy about jobs and attracting jobs to the community or whatever. What's the best way to do that?
So I believe there's two pieces. You have to create a business climate in this community, which not only allows our local businesses to grow and prosper, but allows us to be competitive as we're looking to attract companies to this region. So from the county, internal county perspective, we want to make sure that our processes are in place such that we are not hindering job growth. We don't want to take a year and a half to do something that should only take us 3 months.
Like permitting a new business?
Whether it's permitting or whether it's, infrastructure, whatever the process is, we want to make sure that we are efficient in how we deliver our services. So that's one piece. But the other piece really is that business climate piece. So that when someone picks up the newspaper and reads about Spokane County, are they excited about coming to this community? Are we working together as a region?
Okay.
If you look at Caterpillar, what brought them to this region is the fact that it was the city, the county, the business community. We all came together to make it happen, to attract them here. We worked collaboratively together, and they said they had never seen that kind of collaboration in a community.
And by collaboration, do you mean like specific kind of tax incentives, or what kind of things are we talking about?
No, we're actually very limited in tax incentives. Washington State, we don't have the same tools that Idaho can offer. We are not allowed to gift, so we can't just offer a company $500,000 to come here. Idaho doesn't have the same rules in place. And so they can offer companies actual dollars to settle across the border. So we have to be creative, and that's where that collaboration piece comes together.
Give me a few specifics more about what kind of collaboration, what specific.
So when you look at Caterpillar, for example, mm-hmm. It was permit processing, it was the height of the building that they could have, and then it was getting infrastructure in there in a timely manner. And if we didn't work together, none of those could have been accomplished in a timely fashion to make it happen.
Yeah, and I remember Al telling me about the height of the business that they
right.
just got that done quickly.
And so that happens when you have the ability to work. Local government should not be partisan. There are a few issues within local government that are partisan, mm-hmm. but 99% of what I do is nonpartisan. And that's the way it should be.
So let's talk about this new STA proposal. I know you had concerns last time.
Correct.
Yeah, so as far as the new proposal goes, what do you think of that one?
So I'm going to preface this by saying I'm a huge advocate of transit. I believe that we have to have a solid transit system in order to move people and to make our economy function and grow. I mm-hmm. fundamentally believe in public transportation. I still don't support the new STA ballot measure. And the reason is they're asking for more money than they need. And so I worked very hard to actually try to come to a compromise because I sit on the STA board. Mm-hmm. And there were just folks that were not interested in that compromise. And so when I look at this community and I have to think big picture, what are all of, you know, I represent all 490,000 people live in this community. What are they paying in taxes? And what taxes are going to be going before them? We have to fund schools, libraries, fire districts, roads, you know, transit, you name it. We have all these services that we have to fund through our taxes. And to go out to the public and ask for more money than we need, I can't support that. And so I was advocating for us to do a 1/10 increase without a sunset, because that would fully fund the ballot measure. And unfortunately, they wanted to go for a full 2/10, and I just don't believe that we are being fiscally responsible when we put that out to the public.
And the version Candace, our Candace told me, was that it was 2/10, like you said, but that they may be able to just ask for 1/10 and assume that might be enough.
It's in there so that you, the board can collect up to 2/10.
And you just don't.
I don't have the confidence in the board in collecting only what they need and not what they want. And so I would much rather have, rather than doing the full 2/10 with a sunset, I would have rather have advocated for the 1/10 without a sunset and said, you know, show us that you are capable of implementing these and then come back and tell the public, you know, demonstrate to the public that you are good stewards and then come back and ask for your another 1/10 if you need it.
What and when you talk about compromise and that, and I'm only asking you this because I have STA people in tomorrow, so maybe I can use some of your comments with that when we get to the STA issue. But what things, as far as compromise go, what things do you think should have been cut to get it down to that 1/10? Anything?
Well, I don't think you had to cut anything. You didn't have to cut anything out of the plan.
Oh.
And so this is where they disagree with me, but we pulled in the finance directors from all over. You know, all the jurisdictions and sat down and went through their assumptions and their budgets and you can, you know, maybe it would have, instead of 10 years, it could have taken 12 years, but you could have funded the entire moving forward plan on 1/10 without a sunset.
Okay. So no specifics in your mind.
No,
that was enough.
I'm going to take all the other, you know, there are people who advocate for Central City Line and people who advocate for this or that. I was setting that aside and simply looking at the plan that was being put forward.
Okay. So now the growth issue, the developers, do they have too much influence on the county commission? I know there was, you know, discussion of that with Al and even Todd to some extent. But, I mean, what's your thoughts about maybe developers in general, their influence, and maybe just the whole thing about the urban growth area?
No, I don't believe that they do. They're one constituent group in this community that, you know, shares their thoughts and perspectives. I honestly think that the groups like FutureWise and Spokane Alliance and those other groups actually have more power than any of the other groups in this community, quite frankly. And you have a small minority voice that is actually, I believe, is more powerful than the other voices in this region. Hmm. But the Growth Management Act was actually created it wasn't created for no growth. It was created for planned growth. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's supposed to be, is planned growth over the next 20 to 30 years. Unfortunately, there are certain groups that believe it should be no growth. And that is the balance that we have to take as we implement the, you know, urban growth, you know, comp plan reviews, that we have to find that balance, that we are required to plan for growth for the next 20 to 30 years.
And I think one of the things that I've heard from FutureWise was mostly that thing about just making sure that if you were going to put in developments, you know, way out in the UGA somewhere, that infrastructure cost is their main concern, that, you know, and it sounds like that's what you're saying, right? That the planning is the most important thing. In other words, they were saying, hey, if you're going to, you know, be growing all over the place, you got to make sure that we can pay for the infrastructure, because the, you know, the taxpayers have to pay for things like fire service, police, et cetera, right?
And that's part of the plan that's put into place. So every UGA update has to have a plan that accompanies it that says how you're going to pay for it. And it's yeah. all over time, right? So this is a 20 or 30 year plan.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, here's one thing. And I don't know which case they were talking about with the futurized thing, but I do remember the whole issue about where something went to the Growth Management Hearings Board. It was a development. And in the interim, while they had this whole year to decide if this was inappropriately, if the hearing had been held inappropriately, that the developer went ahead. Remember this whole thing about, you know what I'm talking about, the developer went ahead and proceeded with the project anyway. Remember, even though the Growth Management Hearings Board is hearing that project, that the developer can continue to put the project in.
So you're probably referring to vesting. So
vesting, that's it.
So when we put out our plan, and so in 2013, July of 2013, we put out the new plan.
The new UGA.
The new urban growth boundaries.
Yeah.
So actually, the boundaries themselves were not why it was kicked back from the Growth Management Hearing Board. It was actually they said
hearing
that
process or
they said that
it?
We didn't hold a hearing. We
I remember.
We didn't. So the law allows us to pick a population number.
Yep.
Between the high and the low, it has to be somewhere in there. So we picked a population number, and then based on all the review, that number changed. And that was before my time, but that number changed. And so then what ended up happening, but it was still within the high and low.
It's kind of in the middle, as I remember.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they didn't hold a hearing on the new number, which I think there was a disagreement amongst legal counsels, do you have to have a hearing or not? So because it's still within the parameters.
And the commissioners picked the new number?
So right. But there, and so that's why it was thrown back. Well, we chose as commissioners – rather than we could have easily held a hearing and kept the thing moving forward, the whole plan. There were previous lawsuits though, four of them that were from even before Todd's time. So there, one of them was from before his time. Mm-hmm. Three of them were from before my time. Right. So there's these other lawsuits hanging out there. We chose instead of just kicking this back to the Growth Management Hearing Board, we took all of them together and sat down and went through a mediation process and resolved all of them. So in June of this year, we after 18 months of negotiating and mediation, I went, you know, with all of the plaintiffs and parties in the group, we came to a settlement agreement, and that was released in June. And so, I can...
Okay.
And no,
that's what it is. So what about that vesting issue, though, about then even though something was challenged that the developers can, and maybe this isn't something the county can rule on, it's probably a state thing for all I know, but...
Well, the county probably could, but in my personal opinion, you shouldn't be, if you want to address vesting, do it at the legislative level, not jurisdiction by jurisdiction. I mean, it's, you know, under state law, vesting is allowed. So if you want to address vesting, do it at the legislative level. And we need to find, honestly, we need to find common sense around our urban growth areas. So right now, you know, you look at, you have a school district that owns property outside the UGA, and, you know, they could be, look at the Meade Middle School, I believe it is, that was just, it wasn't that far outside the UGA. They offered to pay for the extension of sewer to their site, not allowing other hookups. It would have been cheaper for them to extend sewer to their site, but because they're outside the UGA boundary, you can't extend sewer outside the UGA boundary. Well, they have to actually bring in solid waste or bring in flow because the kids don't pee enough. They don't, so their system doesn't work efficiently. And so because they had to create an on-site sewer system. So rather than just being able to run a sewer line, which would have saved taxpayer dollars to their school to provide sewer, they couldn't do it. So they're
had to build
their on-site system
just
which,
because it wasn't in the UGA.
Correct, which doesn't work well. So they actually have to bring in flow to make their system work. So the common sense piece needs to be addressed at the state level, okay. and we are working on that.
Okay, but so what about, you know, taxes? I mean, you talked about taxes a little bit, but Maybe just talk about your general philosophy about, I guess, taxes in general.
Well, I'm guessing he said that because he says on his website that we need to quit talking about the size of government and talk about the quality of government.
That's what it was.
Yeah. And I do disagree with that. We cannot be everything for everybody. That's not what government was created for. Government has a specific role. And I believe that we have a responsibility to spend taxpayer money wisely and efficiently. And, you know, I have been invested both internally, looking at our lean management processes, and then also in the criminal.
What was that?
The lean management that I talked about at the beginning.
Okay. Gotcha.
And then also, when you look at where 70% of our budget is related to the criminal justice system, if we're going to make any significant changes in our budget, we're going to have to address the fact that 70% goes to the criminal justice system.
Right, and that's what I wanted to ask you about. I just hadn't written it down yet.
We have for the last 3.5 years been working on an effort with the city of Spokane. It was originally called the Blueprint for Reform. You may have reported on that. Mm-hmm. It's our Spokane Regional Law and Justice Council, where we are looking at how we can create those efficiencies in our system. And we're making some significant improvements. And, you know, you look at the work we're doing, we received almost a $2 million grant from the MacArthur Foundation because of the collaborative work that we're doing in this region to address our processes and to ensure that our outcomes are the outcomes that we want. So my philosophy is we have to operate. We don't have an ability to create unlimited taxes. We just don't. And we're actually even limited. We can only increase county government. We can only increase our taxes by 1% over the previous year. That's about $500,000 a year.
And that's an option that comes around every year, isn't it?
Correct.
What's happened the last couple of years? Did that get approved every
yep.
year? Okay.
Yep. But it's only about $500,000 a year. Well, if you look at county revenue, grows at 1-2% a year, and our expenses grow 3-4% a year, and often driven by the state mandates, you know, the expenses outside our control, mm-hmm. our medical is going up between 18-22% a year. 18-22% this year. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm a county employee. It's going up. So it's going up 18 to our cost. You look at LNI, the state tells us what that number is and what we're going to pay. The state tells us how much we have to pay for the PERS because our employees are in the state retirement system. So those costs alone typically exceed the amount of new revenue that we can bring in every year.
Right.
So county governments statewide are actually struggling to be sustainable long term. So we have to look at how doing things differently. And that's why I've been invested from day one at looking at how we can think outside the box to do county government differently, yet still meet all of our constitutional mandates of what county government has to do.
Okay. The concern of county residents with property crimes.
Right.
What's the answer to that, and how does that fit in with this new kind of justice reform thing?
Okay, so there's two pieces. First of all, if you look at what he's touting about the criminal justice system and work around mental health in our jail, I've been doing that for the last 3 years. I mean, National Institute for Corrections, we brought them in to do voluntarily to do a report on our jail, and then they delivered that to us in October. And we had been implementing that. In May of this year, you know, we went from double bunking to single bunking of our inmates. We opened up a new wing out at Geiger in order to allow inmates who had only been getting out 1 hour a day to now spend the majority of their time out. They eat outside their cells now. We have been working diligently to implement the proposals and the suggestions made by NIC and the report.
Mm-hmm.
We have had public meetings on that, you know, the report, and also laid out to them our action plan. And we've done a very good job putting that into place. Do we have work to do still? Absolutely. We're still working on the system, but we are doing great work around the criminal justice system. You know, he talks about the fact that we should have new pretrial service officers. Well, that was our whole grant to MacArthur Foundation. We're hiring 7 new pretrial service officers mm-hmm. right now as we speak to address that front end issue. You know, we're implementing in October in just a month from now, we are really working on developing a data-driven system so that we are focusing on the offender and not the offense, an offender-based system. Because you can have a low-level offender who's high risk, and you can have a high-level offender who's low risk. And you want to make that decision based on data, not just based on the offense. And so we are actually rolling out our, in October, our tool that will help us make that transition to an offender-based system so that we're being smart about who we keep in jail. You only want to keep people in jail if they're a risk to themselves or they're a risk to the public. Otherwise, you don't want them sitting in there at, you know, the $150 a day or whatever it costs.
And I think my follow-up again is that, did you see that Inlander article on the, you know, the property crimes and how, and it's kind of that state, it's the state laws that are the problem. So that's kind of my question is, how does this justice reform kind of fit in with, you know, the average citizens may be concerned about all the burglaries and all these guys just being turned loose after, you know, serving a minimum kind of sentence. What's just your reaction?
So I personally believe that our challenge around property crime is because of the fact that we have a meth epidemic in this community. And we need to not only be working around the reforms within the system, because you're not going to stop petty crime by keeping someone in jail. And we also, while we look at the reforms within the system, we also need to be looking at the fact that we do have a meth epidemic in this community.
And a
heroin epidemic in this community. And what, as a community, are we going to do to address these challenges and issues? And that's a separate conversation. So,
yeah, what do we do?
I know that we're starting to have those conversations at the health district, and as community leaders, we need to come together and develop that plan. I have, just as an aside, I have served on the Adult Behavioral Health Task Force for the last 2.5 years, and that can in itself be its own subject, but it's the integration of mental health and substance use services to folks as we move towards 2020 with the full integration of physical health. As you know, we're trying to look at health around the whole person, and so those services that we are providing to the community. And typically when there's a substance abuse, so we really, you know, we need to be working with our state partners and local jurisdictions, local community partners, around the fact that there is not enough money going into our mental health and substance use systems. That is a crisis that we are having in this community, but it's going to take state partners as well as our local jurisdictions coming together to work to solve that epidemic.
You know, and as far as that whole thing goes with the re-offenders, the property crime folks, that's pretty much something the state needs to solve, right? I mean, do you have a quick opinion on that? Because I think that, like, Mike Padden was one of the people that's proposed some, like, maybe longer terms for repeat property. Are you familiar with it at all?
Not with what the state's working on. I'm not. Well, the state needs to be a partner at the table. Yes, if you're going to change your laws around the offenses, that does happen at the state level. Okay. But when I told you, I believe that that's all being driven by the fact that we have a meth and heroin epidemic in this community,
right,
then it's not simply a matter of changing state law.
Okay.
It needs to be, it's bringing our state legislators together with our local jurisdictions to address the fact that we have a significant problem in this community.
Perfect. Now, that's kind of the bullet points I had. But I remember last time when we did this 4 years ago, you know, and I asked you at the very end, what else do I need to know? And you brought up about three great topics. I thought, oh my God.
I can't remember what those are now.
Well, I know what it was, but is there any other bullet points that I didn't bring up that we need to discuss? Because we talked about kind of the main ones.
I think we talked about the main ones. You know, it's, I made this point before, in that really county government, 99% of what I do is nonpartisan. It really is about bringing that reasonable and for me, conservative voice to county government to focus on thinking outside the box on how we do things. We cannot do the same thing we've always done and expect to have different outcomes. It's not going to work. And I believe that if you look at my track record over the last 3.5 years, I have tackled every issue with an out-of-the-box thinking. You know, whether it's internally on lean management or whether it's being willing to partner regionally. One of my other successes that is the whole CAD RMS system, which we are going live on October 4th.
No, what's that?
That is when you call 911, you want them to be able to send a police officer to find your fire department to find you. Mm-hmm. So it's the GIS and reporting system. It's behind the whole system that drives our 911 emergency communications. It was over 20 years old and a DOS-based system. They were typing in on the black screen the code for every call.
Okay.
Right? So we're bringing that up to new technology. That's being launched October 4th. Well, when I joined that board, they'd been having this conversation for 8 years on how to move forward. And the total project cost was close to $8 million, which, of course, the city and county couldn't afford to implement. And so I'm working with our criminal justice partners. I went to Teresa Sanders at the city, and I said, we have to figure out a different way to approach this. So we actually took it internal. I have been meeting every other week for the last 2 years with the project team around this to make sure that we problem solve any issues that arise, and we are delivering it to the taxpayer at just over $3 million and on time.
Okay.
And so literally by being willing to cross the river and work with our regional partners, by being able to work with folks, you know, we are bringing projects in, you know, under budget and saving taxpayer money. So I just feel like I've been very successful in the last 3.5 years, and the issues that Andrew raises in this community are issues that I have been deeply involved in and also making significant progress on.
Okay. I'm going to stop this because we have... No.